Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Congress did something remarkable this past week.
It is a milestone. This bill is poised to become the most significant federal bipartisan gun law we've seen in decades.
Members of Congress from either side of the aisle coming together to pass important gun safety legislation. Remarkable for a number of reasons, chief among them, they did it despite the deep partisan divide that exists in America today. How bad is it?
Well, the state of democracy is uncertain, probably as perilous as we've seen, certainly since the 1860s.
From all the years I've been in politics, I'd say this is the worst it's been as far as the partisan disagreements, the anger, the rage.
This week on 880 In-Depth, conversations with two former members of Congress from New York, Pete King and Steve Israel, one Republican, one Democrat. Both are very concerned about what they see happening in American politics today.
I think if there's any hope, it's not going to be in the short term. I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets better.
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Michael Wallace. It's fair to say politics in Washington has become dysfunctional. In a way, it's like that 1970s ad campaign for Miller Lite.
Tastes great. Less filling.
There is a crisis of compromise in American politics today.
It used to be compromise and civility building consensus was a value in Washington, D.C., rewarded by a member of Congress's constituents. Now it is vilified.
How did we get here and how do we get out? Those are questions we put to two former New York members of Congress.
I'm former Congressman Steve Israel. I'm the executive director of the Cornell University Brookings Institute of Politics and Global Affairs.
Peter King, Long Island, former congressman.
Both men spoke to our reporter Peter Haskell this week on the heels of the Supreme Court decision that struck down Roe v. Wade. We begin with Democrat Steve Israel.
This erosion of democratic norms and values, the breakdown of faith in institutions, the hyper-partisanship is the culmination of about 30 or 40 years, according to studies that we've undertaken at Cornell University. And it's accelerated by two influences. The first is social media. Look, we've always had partisan impulses, but now those impulses are accelerated, they're inflamed, they're intensified by social media, where anybody can say anything and it becomes believed by everybody. The second influence is congressional gerrymandering, and let me put that in perspective. When I was elected to the United States Congress in 2000, out of the 435 congressional districts, about 150 were considered to be in the center. Where compromise and consensus was valued. When I chaired the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee in 2011, the number of centrist moderate districts had been reduced by gerrymandering to about 150. Today, in the midterm elections, which are just a few months away, the number of centrist moderate competitive congressional districts is about 30 or 40. And so out of 435 congressional districts, 30 to 40 have constituents who value compromise. All of the other districts have members of Congress who do not fear losing a general election to someone from the opposite party, but fear losing a primary election from somebody further to the left or right of them. And that is what is driving the partisanship on Capitol Hill.
What's the impact then on democracy?
Well, the impact is severe, and it explains almost everything that we're witnessing. If you are a member of Congress who wants to reach across party aisles and get stuff done, and you have a district that has been drawn to protect your right flank or left flank, you're going to lose your primary election. It used to be compromise and civility building consensus was a value in Washington, D.C., rewarded by a member of Congress's constituents. Now it is vilified back home. If you compromise, you're attacked for it. If you work with, if you're a Republican who works with Democrats or vice versa, you pay the price in a lost election. So what we need to do, if there's any hope for democracy, we need to do two things. One is take the partisanship out of drawing congressional districts. Don't draw districts that accentuate the extremes. Draw districts that reflect the vibrant center in the United States. And second, find ways to hold social media more responsible for screaming fire in crowded movie theaters, which is exactly what social media has been doing.
While this partisan divide has been building for years, recent events have helped fuel the fire.
I'm Stacey Lynn in Washington, where there are hundreds of people outside the Supreme Court, a divided group with many celebrating the Supreme Court's decision that there is no longer a federal constitutional right to an abortion, like Alan Parker, who's the president of the Justice Foundation.
The thousands of women I represent hurt by abortion are overjoyed. This is a great day for America.
Many, like Democratic Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, are upset by the ruling.
They bulldozed over reproductive health and rights, and now we must fight back harder than ever before.
Well, what's happening is many, many social issues, which typically in our history were resolved by compromise and negotiation, two factors that are integral to democracy, are now resolved by throwing hand grenades at one another. Now resolved not by trying to find the common ground, but by each side staking out a further position. And so the art of the negotiation, the art of compromise, has just withered in Washington, D.C. In addition to that, these kind of structures of what have been called conflict entrepreneurs, that is, public officials who thrive not on relieving conflict, but by being more incendiary, by capitalizing on conflict, that has permeated our society. It's even permeated our courts, where you have judges who become judges not to rule on the law, but because they themselves want to make a point, want to flex their ideology. And that's become a very, very dangerous to our democracy as well.
In terms of the legitimacy of institutions, it's one thing for people not to trust Congress, but when people don't trust the judicial system, what kind of danger is there? And it strikes me, I think it was John Roberts who said, "My job is to call balls and strikes." Is that what the court is doing now?
I don't believe that the court is calling balls and strikes anymore. I think that the court has decided that they are going to essentially be partisan umpires, and put themselves on the field. I think that's dangerous no matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. But, Peter, you ask a very good question, and it's kind of at the essence of this whole issue. When I was in Congress, we studied the erosion of confidence in institutions. In 2016, I was asked to study why, as a member of Congress, why the American electorate seemed to be moving so far in opposite directions. And one of the things that we found were that the institutions that always kept us grounded together were fraying, and people had lost faith in those institutions, largely as a result of the convergence of 9/11 and the 2008 economic meltdown. And so institutions like sports became less binding with scandals in sports like Deflategate and baseball players on steroids. Institutions like Wall Street became less credible as a result of the 2008 meltdown. Institutions like the courts became less credible as a result of ideology in courtrooms. And so we began to lose our faith in those common institutions that gave us solace, and that further polarized the American electorate.
One of the things we sometimes hear from Republicans when they talk about the January 6th investigation or other things is these false equivalencies, be it the George Floyd protests were violent, or there were Democrats who didn't think President Trump was legitimate because of potential Russian collusion. How do we address these kinds of things where it's well, you said this, or I did this, but you did that. How do we deal with that?
You know, democracy can't survive in a climate of whataboutism. You know, if I say that January 6th was an insurrection, somebody else says, well, so was the attack on courts in Portland. There is no equivalence between the two, not even close. Or if I, as a progressive, see something that bothers me, and then as a progressive, I myself say, well, what about it? That's not helpful. But it's amplified by social media. We used to have a country where we could rely on the media to help guide us through those complexities. It wasn't about whataboutism. It was this is what's going on, and now you make your judgment. We have to hold social media responsible for providing content that is designed to be incendiary, that is designed not to process what has actually happened, but write talking points and 280-character tweets so that we can respond to what's happening. When I was this will show you my age. When I was a kid, I used to come home from high school, and you know what? I would turn on Walter Cronkite on CBS News, as many of my cohorts would, and we would kind of watch him and understand what was happening in Vietnam or with Watergate. Those days are over. Now we curate our own news. Now we are subject to news not by an objective analysis of what's happening, but by our bias confirmation. We read what we want to read. We hear what we want to hear. And that is not healthy for democracy.
As for the future, Democrat Steve Israel told our Peter Haskell,
I think if there's any hope, it's not going to be in the short term. I actually, I'm sorry to say, I think it's going to get a little worse before it gets better. But it will get better. And it will get better when we, number one, reform partisan congressional gerrymandering and draw districts not to protect the left and the right, but to represent the broad base of Americans. And number two, when we find responsible ways of holding social media accountable, when we perhaps teach news literacy in our colleges, our universities, our high schools, when we return to the understandable values of being consumers of news and let people know when they are being propagandized and when they're receiving objective news and analysis of current events.
We've seen this fury on both sides, be it January 6th or the post-Roe decision. How concerned are you about political violence?
You know, when I was in Congress, I saw over 16 years the intensification of demonizing the other side. I saw many of my colleagues begin to view people on the other side of the aisle as somehow alien, un-American, as having dangerous ideas. But I never saw anything close to what I saw on January 6th. And I become very, very deeply concerned when my former colleagues, who I know better, who I know saw that day as a violent attack, begin to apologize for it or try and deflect. If we can't agree that beating up Capitol Hill police officers to the point where they were bloodied in an attempt to stop the counting of an election, which is fundamental democracy, if we can't agree on those facts, what will we ever agree on? And at that point, it just becomes too late to salvage democracy in the long term. And so we've got to get back to a point in time where we can at least agree on the facts and then learn how to state our disagreements respectfully, civilly, and come to some compromise.
Should we fear the end of this democracy as we know it?
I don't know that we should fear the end of democracy as we know it, because fear does no good. I think the first step is understanding how we're sliding, coming to grips with the fact that democracy is not now what it used to be, and rebuilding the center in America. The fact of the matter is that in our democracy, nearly 60% of Americans support a woman's right to choose under certain circumstances. Not all, but under certain circumstances. The fact of the matter is that a majority of Americans in a general election voted for Joe Biden. If we can find a way to reconstitute that center, not to the far left, not to the far right, but empower and embolden that center and give it agency again, then I think we'll repair our democracy.
On the other side of the aisle is former Republican Congressman Pete King, also from Long Island. There are many instances where the two men worked together on issues that benefited New York and beyond, including 9/11. Pete King served almost three decades before retiring in 2021. He sat down with our Peter Haskell this week.
How would you describe the current partisan divide?
From all the years I've been in politics, I'd say this is the worst it's been as far as the partisan disagreements, the anger, the rage. And it's interesting because people will say they want to find a compromise, they want people to work together. But if you do work together, if you do find a compromise, then your own party often calls you a traitor. You're accused of not being loyal enough to your principles. So it's very difficult. And people also, I think, more and more, they're living in silos. They're living in echo chambers where they only watch or listen to their own the favorite channels and stations. They run social media, only going to websites that support their positions and which demonize the opposition. So now this is far worse. Listen, going back to the days of Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill, you never had a more conservative president or a more liberal Speaker of the House, and yet they managed either to work things out or to respect each other's opinion. Today, it's all or nothing. And so, if you do try to come to the middle, you do try to work it out, your own party will attack you, and then you have to worry about being, if you're a politician, being elected in the primary, because the primary, usually it's the base voters come out, and they feel the strongest, and they just don't want any compromise. And the problem is everyone they talk to agrees with them, because people are now just staying in their own small circles.
How does this shake out going forward, then? If the people who want to compromise can't get elected, the people who do get voted in are the extremes, what does that mean for the political system, and what does it mean for the country?
To me, it's a bad omen for the country. We have to find ways to work together. I consider myself a strong conservative, but I will sit down if it's necessary to get something passed. You work, you get as much as you can of what you're looking for, and the other side will try and get as much as they want, and you work out a compromise. I mean, that's the only way. Listen, in a democracy of all the hundreds of millions of people we have, where people have so many different views, the only way you can function is to compromise, because we all have very deeply held views. But you can't have 400 secretaries of state or 500 presidents. You only have one president, one secretary of state, one speaker of the House, one majority leader of the Senate. And so they have to form coalitions. They have to try to bring people together. Otherwise, we're going to be just locked in place, and we're going to be screaming at each other from opposite sides of the street, but never getting the job done.
But despite all of the noise that comes from Washington, D.C. these days, to their credit, lawmakers did get something done last week.
Breaking news on Capitol Hill, where the first major gun control legislation in decades is expected to get final approval in Congress later today.
We asked Pete King, can that be a model moving ahead?
The gun bill could be a blueprint, but the reality is the horror of the shooting in Texas, also the one in Buffalo, and for that matter, also the one on the Long Island, on the New York City subway system, which could have been a disaster when you had over 30 bullets being fired in a crowded subway car, it prompted Congress that they realized something had to be done. Quite honestly, the bill they passed is not that significant as far as what it actually provides for. I think what is significant or could be significant is the fact that they found any agreement at all. And it sends a signal that compromise is possible. Again, it was not, it's not that strong a bill, but it's a step forward. And that could be an omen that we are turning the corner.
It's, you know, the thing that's interesting is that after Sandy Hook, it seems even after Uvalde, Texas, there's still no consensus about how to make kids safe, which it would seem people in both parties want. What does that say, and how do we overcome that?
I think really it's, you know, in the end, it's up to the voters. I mean, the voters are the ones who, you know, they elect people, and they say what they want. And even though overall voters say they want compromise, the fact is when the reality of a compromise comes out, they end up being very critical of it. So I think, again, in a democracy, voters get the government they vote for, that they ask for. And if they don't like it, they have to go out and they should change it through the democratic process. And so you need really more voter input on a regular basis, not just when it comes to a primary election. They should be following it day in and day out to get the government they want. Because, again, I'm not trying to trivialize it. Democracy is a participatory sport. You can't just sit back and criticize. You have to get in the arena yourself. You have to follow it, and you have to focus on what you want and then find ways to get it done, not how you find ways to criticize what gets done.
There's been a lot of anger about a lot of things lately. If people refuse to accept the results of an election or an investigation or a court decision, then what?
Democracy will fail. We have to accept the results of the election. Democrats had a hard time accepting Donald Trump's election in 2016, saying there was Russian collusion. Obviously, President Trump didn't accept his election results in 2020. Obviously, people today are opposed to the court decision in Roe versus Wade. Well, you know, I'm a conservative who opposed court decisions for many years, but you don't go out and write and don't demand that we get new judges on the court. What you do is you go out and you work hard, you elect people, and then if you elect a president, he will appoint the judges that would more support his position or your position. This is, you can't have instant gratification in democracy. Often it can take 5, 10, 15, 20 years to get something done. But the alternative to that is to have a dictatorship where someone just comes in and does whatever he or she wants. So I would say to people, if you object to a decision, it's great. It's fine to peacefully demonstrate. But the reality is, if you want to change it, you have to work through the legislative and judicial process.
Today, Pete King spends part of his time commenting on local talk radio. Much of the discussion there centers on the merits of relitigating January 6th and the last presidential election.
Listen, I think there were things done by some Republicans after the election in November, which I think were wrong. But I also say what the Democrats did to President Trump by charging Russian collusion using the CIA and the FBI when there was absolutely no collusion at all and put a cloud over his presidency, that was wrong. And I think what some Republicans did, including the president, after this year's after the 2020 election was wrong. Both sides have to step back and accept the results. Listen, we could have gone back to 1960. Richard Nixon could have contested his election. In 2000, Al Gore could have kept that fight going for weeks and weeks and weeks, even after the Supreme Court decision. Both of them respected the institution. President Nixon respected the institution of the presidency. Al Gore respected the institution of the presidency. And they realized that the greater good was to accept the results of the election as they were. So I'm really calling on both parties that no matter what happens in the next election or elections coming up, accept the results. Don't say they're rigged. Don't say there was collusion by a foreign power. Accept the results of the election.
But there are some Republicans being elected and running in various places, jobs that control the levers of elections, who say that President Trump did win. And, I mean, should we agree that the candidate with the most votes is the winner? And what happens if some of these extremists get elected?
Well, I would say the same thing about Democrats who said, including very top Democrats, who said that Russia colluded to elect President Trump in 2016. And that was a total lie. And many of them still believe that. So I'm calling on both parties to accept the results of the elections. And if there is a dispute, take it to court, get it to court quickly, and get it resolved quickly. You can't leave these charges lingering out there for weeks, months, and years.
But specifically, there are Republicans running for Secretary of State and county clerks and things like that who very strongly say President Trump won. So if they control the machinery, are you concerned they might try to overturn a particular election?
Again, all that has to be monitored. And I would say that's what we have courts for. And with all that was alleged after the last election, the fact is the system did work. President Biden was elected. The Electoral College did elect him, and that was confirmed by the House and Senate. So we have a system that's strong. It is resilient. So long as people stay alert and awake, it's going to happen.
How bad could it get in America? We asked Peter King if he's worried about the divide leading to political violence again.
Yes, there is a chance that. In fact, there's a real possibility of it, which is why people in elective office and people running for office and people in the media, anyone who's involved in the national and public debate has to be more restrained, has to use common sense and not be saying anything that can lead to violence.
Pete, is there anything else that you want to add?
No, just let's remember, with all of the dissension and arguing and taking to the streets, people should realize we live in the greatest country in the world, and it's only in countries like America where you have the right, where any person at all, any citizen at all, has the absolute right to speak out on any issue, support anyone they want for office, and campaign for anyone they want. This is a true democracy, and we should realize that and not be somehow giving up or not surrendering. We have to fight hard for what we believe within the system.
Congressman, thanks so much for your time.
Peter, thank you.
Our thanks to Steve Israel and Pete King, two men who may not agree on everything, but they both do love their country, and they both have hope that service to the greater good will one day become the main driver of American politics. Our thanks to the good people at Miller Lite for that dated but fitting reference at the open. 880 In-Depth is a production of WCBS 880. The executive producers are Peter Haskell and Tim Scheld. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your audio so you won't miss a week. I'm Michael Wallace. Thank you for listening.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. Beginning, middle, or end of the year, it's always a great time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. Your questions make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money and, more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.